Encounters at Delphi, Rosicrucian Library research staff. Over the millennium of its activity, the Oracle at Delphi gave advice to those from many walks of life, with sometimes surprising results. Collected here are some of these oracular responses as recorded by ancient historians and supplicants of the Oracle.
Know thyself. One of the great inscriptions at the Temple of Apollo at Delphi was Gnothi Seauton, know thyself. Sages have debated its meaning and achievability for the thousands of years since prophecy began at Delphi. When he was asked what was very difficult, Thales said, to know oneself. And what was easy? To advise another. What was most pleasant? To be successful. To the question, what is the divinity? He replied, that which has neither beginning nor end. There are two sentences inscribed upon the Delphic Oracle, hugely accommodated to the usages of a human being's life. Know thyself, and nothing too much. And upon these all other precepts depend. They themselves accord and harmonize with each other, and each seems to illustrate the energy of the other. For in know thyself is included nothing too much, and so again in the latter is comprised know thyself. And Ion hath spoken of it thus. This sentence, know thyself, is but a word, but only Jove himself could do the thing. And thus, Pindar, this sentence brief, do nothing to excess. The wise have always praised exceedingly. They, therefore, that have impressed these upon their minds as the precepts of the Pythian Oracle, can easily conform themselves to all the affairs of life and bear them handsomely, considering their nature, so that they are neither lifted up to arrogance upon a prosperous event, nor, when an adverse happens, are dejected into complaint through pusillanimity, and that fear of death, which is so congenial to us, both which proceed from the ignorance of those things which fall out in human life by necessity and fatal decree. The maxim, know thyself, comes down to us from the skies. It should be imprinted in the heart and stored in the memory. Take counsel with the majority. In the city are graves of Megarians. They made one for those who died in the Persian invasion, and what is called the Esimnium, shrine of Esimnus, was also a tomb of heroes. When Agamemnon's son, Hyperion, the last king of Megara, was killed by Sandion for his greed and violence, they resolved no longer to be ruled by one king, but to have elected magistrates and to obey one another in turn. Then Asimnus, who had a reputation second to none among the Megarians, came to the god in Delphi and asked in what way they could be prosperous. The oracle, in its reply, said that they would fare well if they took counsel with the majority. This utterance they took to refer to the dead, and built a council chamber in this place in order that the grave of their heroes might be within it. The sky will not fall. Podalirius went to Delphi and inquired of the oracle where he should settle. And on receiving an oracle that he should settle in the city where, if the encompassing heaven were to fall, he would suffer no harm, he settled in that place of the Carian Chersonese, which is encircled by mountains all around the horizon. The reward for hospitality from the 6th century before the Common Era. In the Chersonese, then the Phoenicians made themselves masters of all the other cities except the city of Cardia. Of these cities up to that time, Miltiades, the son of Cimon, the son of Stesagoras, had been despot. Miltiades, the son of Cypselos, having obtained this government in the manner which here follows. The inhabitants of this Chersonese were Dolonchian Thracians, and these Dolonchians, being hard-pressed in war by the Absinthians, sent their kings to Delphi to consult the oracle about the war. And the Pythian prophetess answered them that they must bring into their land as founder of a settlement the man who should first offer them hospitality as they returned from the temple. The Dolonchians then passed along the sacred road through the land of the Phocians and the Boeotians, and, as no man invited them, they turned aside and came to Athens. Now, at that time in Athens, the government was held by Peisistratos. But Miltiades, also the son of Cypselos, had some power, who belonged to a family which kept 4-horse chariot teams, and who was descended originally from Iacos and Aegina, though in more recent times his family was Athenian. Phalaios, the son of Ajax, having been the first of his house to become an Athenian. This Miltiades was sitting in the entrance of his own dwelling and seeing the Dolonchians going by with dress that was not of the native Athenian fashion and with spears. He shouted to them. And when they approached, he offered them lodging and hospitality. They then, having accepted and having been entertained by him, proceeded to declare all the utterances of the oracle. And having declared it, they asked him to do as the god had said. And Miltiades, when he heard it, was at once disposed to agree, because he was vexed by the rule of Peisistratos, and desired to be removed out of the way. He set out, therefore, forthwith to Delphi, to inquire of the oracle whether he should do that which the Dolonchians asked of him, and as the Pythian prophetess also bade him do so. Miltiades, the son of Cypselos, who had before this been victor at Olympia, with a 4-horse chariot, now taking with him of the Athenians everyone who desired to share in the expedition, sailed with the Dolonchians and took possession of the land. And they who had invited him to come to them made him despot over them. Dead or Alive, Aesop's Delphi Tale from the 6th century before the Common Era. A rogue laid a wager that he could prove the oracle at Delphi to be untrustworthy by procuring from it a false reply to an inquiry by himself. So he went to the temple on the appointed day with a small bird in his hand, which he concealed under the folds of his cloak, and asked whether what he held in his hand were alive or dead. If the oracle said dead, he meant to produce the bird alive. If the reply was alive, he intended to wring its neck and show it to be dead. But the oracle was too much for him, for the answer he got was this: "Stranger, whether the thing that you hold in your hand be alive or dead is a matter that depends entirely on your own will." From Croesus, who lived from 595 through 547 before Common Era. And to the Lydians, whom he sent to make trial of the oracles, he gave charge as follows: that from the day on which they set out from Sardis, they should reckon up the number of days following, and on the 100th day they should consult the oracles, asking what Croesus, the son of Aliates, king of the Lydians, chanced then to be doing. And whatever the oracles severally should prophesy, this they should cause to be written down and bear back to him. Now, what the other oracles prophesied is not by any reported, but at Delphi, so soon as the Lydians entered the sanctuary of the temple to consult the god and asked that which they were commanded to ask, the Pythian prophetess spoke thus in hexameter measure: "But the number of sand I know, and the measure of drops in the ocean. The dumb man I understand, and I hear the speech of the speechless. And there hath come to my soul the smell of a strong-shelled tortoise, boiling in cauldron of bronze, and the flesh of a lamb mingled with it. Under it bronze is laid, it hath bronze as a clothing upon it." When the Pythian prophetess had uttered this oracle, the Lydians caused the prophecy to be written down and went away at once to Sardis. And when the rest also, who had been sent round, were there arrived with the answers of the oracles, then Croesus unfolded the writings one by one and looked upon them. And at first none of them pleased him, but when he heard that from Delphi, forthwith did he worship to the god and accepted the answer, judging that the oracle at Delphi was the only true one, because it had found out what he himself had done. For when he had sent to the several oracles his messengers to consult the gods, keeping well in mind the appointed day, he contrived the following device. He thought of something which it would be impossible to discover or to conceive of, and cutting up a tortoise and a lamb, he boiled them together himself in a cauldron of bronze, laying a cover of bronze over them. On another occasion, Croesus gave charge that they should ask the oracles this question also: whether Croesus should march against the Persians. They inquired thus, and the answers of both the oracles agreed in one, declaring to Croesus that if he should march against the Persians, he would destroy a great empire. When Croesus does attack the Persians, he is defeated, and it is his empire that is destroyed. The Persian king Cyrus then asks him, "Croesus, tell me who of all was it who persuaded thee to march upon my land, and so to become an enemy to me instead of a friend?" And he said, "O king, I did this to thy felicity and to my own misfortune. And the cause of this was the god of the Hellenes, who incited me to march with my army. For no one is so senseless as to choose of his own will war rather than peace. Since in peace the sons bury their fathers, but in war the fathers bury their sons. But it was pleasing, I suppose, to the divine powers that these things should come to pass thus." Croesus sent certain of the Lydians to Delphi, enjoining them to lay the fetters upon the threshold of the temple and to ask the god whether he felt no shame that he had incited Croesus by his prophecies to march upon the Persians, persuading him that he should bring to an end the empire of Cyrus, seeing that these were the first fruits of spoil which he had won from it, at the same time displaying the fetters. This they were to ask, and moreover also whether it was thought right by the gods of the Hellenes to practice ingratitude. When the Lydians came and repeated that which they were enjoined to say, it is related that the Pythian prophetess spoke as follows: "The fated destiny it is impossible even for a god to escape. And as to the oracle which was given, Croesus finds fault with good ground, for Loxias told him beforehand that if he should march upon the Persians, he should destroy a great empire. And he, upon hearing this, if he wished to take counsel well, ought to have sent and asked further whether the god meant his own empire or that of Cyrus. But as he did not comprehend that which was uttered, and did not ask again, let him pronounce himself to be the cause of that which followed." Thus the Pythian prophetess replied to the Lydians, and they brought the answer back to Sardis and repeated it to Croesus. And he, when he heard it, acknowledged that the fault was his own and not that of the god. From Solon, who lived around 590 before Common Era. Thus, there being great hopes on both sides, the chief men pressed Solon to take the government into his own hands and, when he was once settled, manage the business freely and according to his pleasure. And many of the commons, perceiving it would be a difficult change to be effected by law and reason, were willing to have one wise and just man set over the affairs. And some say that Solon had this oracle from Apollo: "Take the mid seat and be the vessel's guide. Many in Athens are upon your side." Solon then chose to institute a series of even-handed reforms in Athens that would be the eventual basis of the city's democracy. He preserved the landowners' holdings while canceling the debts of the poor. He outlawed debtors' enslavement. He increased the power of the citizens' legislature and abolished the severe laws of Draco. Thus, he obeyed the oracle for his own good and that of Athens. Athens seeks the oracle's aid. from 480 before Common Era. When an Athenian delegation asked how to defend against Persian attacks, the oracle gave dire warnings, but also some glimmer of hope. Athena cannot prevail to appease great Zeus in Olympus. Though she, with words very many, and wiles close woven, entreat him. But I will tell thee this more, and will clench it with steel adamantine. Then, when all else shall be taken, whatever the boundary of Cecrops holds within, and the dark ravines of divinest Kithaeron, a bulwark of wood, at the last, Zeus grants to the Trito-born goddess Athena. Soul to remain unwasted, which thee and thy children shall profit. And later, as Herodotus explains, meanwhile, the citizens of Delphi consulted the oracle of the god on behalf of themselves and on behalf of Hellas, being struck with dread. And a reply was given them that they should pray to the winds, for these would be powerful helpers of Hellas in fight. During the Persian attacks, it was the bulwark of wooden ships and the great winds at the Battle of Artemisium, which were credited with the weakening of the Persian forces and their eventual defeat at Salamis. The God, Called or Uncalled, from the 5th century before Common Era. In the preparations for the Peloponnesian War, the Lacedaemonians, Spartans, made inquiry at Delphi as to their cause. And though the Lacedaemonians had made up their own minds on the fact of the breach of the treaty and the guilt of the Athenians, yet they sent to Delphi and inquired of the god whether it would be well with them if they went to war, and, as it is reported, received from him the answer that if they put their whole strength into the war, victory would be theirs, and the promise that he himself would be with them, whether invoked or uninvoked. This expression of the oracle made a lasting impression on history. The Emperor Julian II wrote to his friend, the historian Sallust, "God on his side will not fail us, but in the words of the oracle once given of old, invoked or uninvoked, God will be present with us." And in the 20th century, the psychologist and mystic Carl Gustav Jung had the Latin version of this Delphic statement engraved above the doorway of his home. Vocatus atque non vocatus, Deus auderit. When questioned, Jung gave his reasons for this inscription. "It is cut in stone over the door of my house in Küsnacht, near Zurich, and otherwise found in Erasmus's collection of the Adagia, 16th century. It is a Delphic oracle, though. It says, yes, the god will be on the spot. But in what form and to what purpose? I have put the inscription there to remind my patients and myself, Timor Dei, initium sapientiae. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom." Here another not less important road begins, not the approach to Christianity, but to God himself? And this seems to be the ultimate question. From Socrates, who lived 469 through 399 before Common Era. In addition to his own life-changing encounter with Delphi, related in Socrates Impoverished and Enriched, elsewhere in this issue, Socrates also highly valued the divine state reached by the Pythias at Delphi. It might be so if madness were simply an evil, but there is also a madness which is a divine gift and the source of the greatest blessings granted to humanity. For prophecy is a madness, and the prophetess at Delphi and the priestesses at Dodona, when out of their senses, have conferred great benefits on Greece, both in public and private life. But when in their senses, few or none. And I might also tell you how the Sibyl and other inspired persons have given to many a one many an intimation of the future, which has saved them from falling. From Cicero, who lived 106 through 43 before the Common Era. And now, when Cicero, full of expectation, was again bent upon political affairs, a certain oracle blunted the edge of his inclination. For, consulting the god of Delphi, how he should attain most glory, the Pythoness answered, "By making his own genius, and not the opinion of the people, the guide of his life." Therefore, at first he passed his time in Rome, cautiously, and was very backward in pretending to public offices, so that he was, at the time, in little esteem, and had got the names so readily given by low and ignorant people in Rome of Greek and scholar. But when his own desire of fame and the eagerness of his father and relations had made him take in earnest to pleading, he made no slow or gentle advance to the first place, but shone out in full luster at once, and far surpassed all the advocates of the bar. From Dio Chrysostom, who lived around 40 through 120 Common Era. I decided to go to the god's temple myself and consult him as a competent advisor, according to the ancient custom of the Greeks. For surely, I thought, if he gives competent advice about sickness, and if children are not born to a person about childlessness and about harvests, he will not show any less ability about such a case as mine. And then, when I consulted him, he gave me a strange sort of reply, and not one easy to interpret. For he bade me to keep on doing with all zeal the very thing wherein I am engaged, as being a most honorable and useful activity, until you come, said he, to the uttermost parts of the earth. And yet lying is a harsh thing to impute, and not consistent with even a human being's standards, to say nothing of a god's. Accordingly, I reflected that Odysseus, after all his wanderings, did not hesitate to roam once more when he carried an oar as Tiresias, a man dead and gone, had advised him, until he should fall in with people who knew not the sea, even by hearsay, And should not I follow his example, if God so bade? So, after exhorting myself in this way, neither to fear nor to be ashamed of my action, and putting on humble attire and otherwise chastening myself, I proceeded to Rome everywhere. And those whom I met, on catching sight of me, would sometimes call me a tramp and sometimes a beggar, though some did call me a philosopher. From this, it came about gradually, and without any planning or self-conceit on my part, that I acquired this name. Now, the great majority of those styled philosophers proclaim themselves such, just as the Olympian heralds proclaim the victors. But in my case, when the other folks applied this name to me, I was not able always and in all instances to have the matter out with them. And very likely, as it turned out, I did profit somewhat by the general report about me. For many would approach me and ask what was my opinion about good and evil. As a result, I was forced to think about these matters, that I might be able to answer my questioners. A Tale from Aelian, who lived from 175 to 235 Common Era. Three young men of the same city, having been sent to Delphi to consult the oracle, fell among thieves. One of them ran away and escaped. The second, having killed all the thieves but one, missed the last and ran his sword through his companion by accident. To him that ran away, the Pythia gave this oracle. You allowed your companion to be slain. I will not answer you. Leave my temple. To the other, requesting an answer, the Pythia gave this. You slew your friend by accident in his defense. Clearer than ever is your innocence. The End of the Oracle, from the 4th through 5th centuries, Common Era. It is said that the Emperor Diocletian sent an emissary to Delphi in 302 Common Era to ask about his proposed persecution of the Christian sect, as he had earlier persecuted the Manichaeans. The oracle's response is reported in Eusebius. About that time, it is said that Apollo spoke from a deep and gloomy cavern, and through the medium of no human voice, and declared that the righteous ones on earth were a bar to his speaking the truth, and accordingly, that the oracles from the tripod were fallacious. Hence it was that he suffered his tresses to droop in token of grief, and mourned the evils which the loss of the oracular spirit would entail for humanity. Diocletian then proceeded with his campaign against the Christians. It was so severe in Egypt that Coptic Christians still today number their calendar from the era of Diocletian. Nevertheless, Christianity was tolerated in the empire by Emperor Constantine I, and then grew rapidly in power and influence. In 361 and 362, the Emperor Julian II, the last imperial practitioner of the old religion, attempted a restoration and is said to have consulted Delphi about reviving the oracle. By legend, Delphi's response was, "Say to the king, my beautifully built house has fallen. No longer does Phoebus, Apollo, have his dwelling, his prophetic daemon, or his oracular spring. The water is now dry. In 389, persecutions of the old religion began under the Christian Roman Emperor Theodosius I. In 391, Christianity was made the exclusive state religion, and older temples were closed. Delphi's Pythia was silent. However, her tradition has survived the centuries.